everybody. My name is Davis Buchanan, and I want to welcome you to the podcast where we discuss famous people and the names they share with people who might actually deserve to be the famous one. That's right. This is I'm Not Adam West, and joining me as always is my co-host, Adam West.
What's up, Adam? How's it going this morning?
Hey, Davis. Oh, it's good. We are recording in the morning. Yeah, this is it's gonna be something. I think this is definitely our first time to do something like this. So,
this is definitely our first time to get this wild.
Yeah, I've got my coffee in hand, my computer at my side. I'm ready to do this. But yeah, I'm good, man. A lot of life things have happened since the last time we recorded. We've kind of been on a little break, just with vacations and whatnot. So I've since left the country.
Yeah, well, and you left the country. You left the country not to where you intended to go, Adam.
Not to where I intended to go.
I've talked to Mr. EJ Hibbler, who was on the trip with you, but I haven't actually talked to you about what happened.
Long story short, Davis, because I don't really want to drag it out, but you know, in our previous talks, we've talked about me going to Australia, and that was definitely the point when we got on the plane to leave, and fully excited for that. And comes to find out that we needed visas to get into the country, I'll just take the blame.
It sounds like EJ was fine.
Well, so neither one of us had our visas when we started out this trip, because you don't have to get your visa to go to Europe. And for some reason, and call me dumb, I just thought that, Australia is pretty much the Southern Europe, really.
I think, here's the crazy thing, Adam, I think both Europe and Australia would take offense at that sentence.
Oh, they would. So I'm glad we haven't reached a broader audience yet. So, so you need a visa to get into Australia. Didn't know that. So, got to Taiwan. Basically, when we were getting on the plane, they were like, oh, well, since you're just going to Taiwan right now, and because we're doing a kind of a layover there, we can get our visas on the way, is what they told us. And so that's what we tried to do. EJ's went through. Mine had some difficulty. No one could tell me why.
It's probably outstanding parking tickets or something.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there is a parking ticket in College Station that I refused to pay because I found it ridiculous. So maybe they know.
Hilarious.
But
your moral high ground has now prevented you from getting to the land down under.
That's, you know, I always knew it was going to come back to bite me one day. I didn't know. But anyway, we got to Taiwan. We decided, you know, let's make something positive out of a negative, and stayed in Taiwan for a week. And man, I honestly could not have wished for a better trip. Taiwan is beautiful, super cheap. If you ever get a chance to go, I would highly encourage it. And moved. I'm now in a new home now that I'm back in Austin. And so,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's great. Loving the setup. And just living on a better side of town, you know. So it's pretty good, man. I'm glad to be here. So what about yourself, Davis? You are officially done with camp.
Officially done with camp. Been done for about a month now, 5 weeks or so. So back at home, back in Tyler, doing kind of the normal life thing. Lane and I went to the beach right after summer ended, which was really fun. I just chilled and read books. But anyway, yeah, so I've been back town and hanging out. I think something that I have started, like, not even really intentionally started to do, but something that I want to do more here in town is just get involved and, like, get to know the Tyler community better. Like, I just have had the opportunity to meet a couple of people who are people in town and doing stuff. Like, I met the guy that owns Lola's sandwich shop. His name's Sean. He's super cool to talk to. And I got to meet Ryan Dixon, who's a friend of yours, which was really fun. So we hung out at Truvine. So it's just been cool to, like, get to know some people in town. I think that's something I want to do better about, is knowing the people that are around me and not just being locked into sort of the camp world here, because it can kind of dominate life. So
Definitely
anyway, it's been good.
There.
It's ready to get started with the fall. I'm so glad football's back, Adam. I'm not going to spend this podcast talking about Georgia football, but I'm so glad that it's back. It makes Saturdays that much better.
Yes, which is funny. Our schools played last week, which they is did. To say your school played and my school got paid.
Hey, so. the Middle Tennessee Blue Raiders got some good practice for a grueling FCS schedule, and your quarterback is pretty good. Caleb Stockstill is a good quarterback, so okay. Nobody can tell you otherwise. He's not. I don't know if he doesn't have necessarily the physicals to keep up, but mm-hmm. he's a solid quarterback, and y'all played well. Whoever y'all's running back is ran hard too. It was awesome. Yeah. So
I can't say I watched the game.
Have you ever watched a Middle Tennessee State Blue Raiders football game?
I went to one when I was there, and okay. We got slaughtered, and I walked out thinking, that's the last time I'm going to do that.
That's fair. So I say, Adam, we need to discover where the common linking point between several different aspects are. Are you ready to hear those aspects?
Yeah, shoot.
Okay. Today, we're going to look at what unites a missed opportunity, cryptography, and the Oregon Trail.
Mm.
Now, Adam, do you have any idea in the wide, wide world of the, I guess just the world in general, who I could be talking about when I reference those things altogether? What name are we talking about, Adam?
You know, I was actually on the Oregon Trail this past week, and I was reading a book on the Oregon Trail by Dan Brown.
Oh, so I think so. Who are we talking about, though?
It has to be.
But who are we talking about, though?
I think it's Dan Brown.
Like Dan Brown.
I think
you're right. You're right. We're talking about Dan Brown. So Dan Brown, Adam. If people don't already know who who we would say the most famous Dan Brown is, who is he? What did he do?
Yeah.
Hey, Adam.
We're doing great. I'm going to pause this. We're doing great this morning. We're really.
What's his deal?
Okay. Dan Brown. Yes, if you don't know him, / have been living. I don't want to say under a rock because you could very easily not know this guy. But
maybe if you've been living in a tunnel.
Maybe. Yeah, a little bit of light.
Or if you've been living, or if you're not a big, if maybe if you're not a reader like me or you.
Or see, I'll just start off with saying, and I don't want to, and we'll go into a little bit later, but, we both grew up in the South. And so
that's right.
He is an American novelist. So one of his, if not his famous, most famous book is The Da Vinci Code. And Davis, I don't know what kind of like background or family ties that you had with this book, but I remember just being in and around school in the Bible Belt. Everyone was like, you can't read this book. You're gonna turn against your faith if you read this book.
Right.
You know, like you're led to damnation. And I think I was in high school. This came out, the Da Vinci Code came out in 2003, so I would have been a freshman in high school, I think. And so, yeah, I mean, kind of an interesting guy just all the way through. To start off, he stated on his own website that his books are not anti-Christian, that he is on a constant spiritual journey himself, and that the books, especially Da Vinci Code, is simply an entertaining story that promotes spiritual discussion and debate. And so, and that he wants the book to be used as a positive catalyst for introspection and exploration of faith. And so Dan Brown was born in Exeter, New Hampshire. He was raised by his mom and dad. His mom was actually a church organist. Even at an early age, had a lot of interest in anagrams and word puzzles, which definitely play into...
Probably did Sudoku, crosswords.
Sudoku he was, that old?
I guess Sudoku's numbers. I was reaching for the joke. Too fast.
Sorry,
but
man.
He's probably killer bananagrams. He'd probably kill somebody with bananagrams.
This would definitely play into a lot of his writings. I mean, it says him and his siblings, which he was the youngest of three, participated in elaborate treasure hunts, which if you want to boil down, you know, the Da Vinci Code and Angels and Demons to their core, like that's what it is, you know.
International treasure is what it is.
Basically, exactly. Fun fact, which I didn't know this at all about Dan Brown, his first profession was not a writer. After he graduated from Amherst, he began a musical career.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, he created effects with a synthesizer and created like a children's cassette, which can dates this. Yeah. Okay. So he moved to Hollywood to pursue a career as a singer songwriter and a pianist, where he met his future wife at the time, Blythe Newton. And so she is 12 years his senior, and he kind of,
Is the deal? I feel like the last like 15 guys we've talked about are all, you know, a decade or more older than their spouses.
Well, she is actually older than him, but at the same token, I think what I'm like, me reading between the lines here, you can't be famous unless you have somebody in your life who you've married who's younger or older by a significant amount.
Significantly, that's good.
Moved back to New Hampshire where they eventually married. He began his writing career when he went on vacation, and he read a book by Sidney Sheldon called The Doomsday Conspiracy, which inspired him to become a writer of thrillers. So started with a book called The Digital Fortress. And then in 2001, he wrote The Deception Point, which I read and actually very much enjoyed, kind of set in like, if I can remember correctly, at like the North Pole or Antarctica, one of the poles.
Oh my gosh, it's the Santa conspiracy. It's the Santa Claus.
He's going after all of our deep held religious beliefs.
Oh my gosh, you're right.
The Da Vinci Code would come out in 2003. So again, as we kind of said before, was pretty divisive. It was definitely controversial.
Well, I remember it being less about like the, oh, this is like an attack against Christianity, and more along the lines of like, what if Jesus really did get married? But I remember even seeing Dan Brown or seeing quotes from him, like, I didn't, like, this is not, I made this up. Like, I did this to make a book interesting. And then, but I remember even sitting, on my parents' couch and watching, you know, like a History Channel mini documentary about like, what if the Da Vinci Code is real? Life. What if we can find the secrets of history? Like stuff that was more about the what if this is like actually what if there is a secret order that's been, you know, preserving the line of Jesus or whatever, more so than like, oh, this is a direct attack. Yeah, what I remember.
Yeah, it's just kind of funny, but I remember the same thing. I mean, I remember sitting in youth group and having sermons about like, okay, this is why this is not true. When again, like you started with saying, Dan Brown saying, this is made up. We're on the same page, actually. Yes, yeah. it's not real. Okay, so 2004, all of his books at that point, because of Da Vinci Code, have reached the New York Times best-selling list. He would come out with, and so this is kind of the midpoint, I guess, of the Robert Langdon book series. So then he came out with The Lost Symbol in 2009, and then Inferno in 2013, which I think has already become a movie as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think these have been great Tom Hanks vehicles, all these. Yes. But was there movies made of all of them?
So there hasn't been one made of The Lost Symbol yet.
But all the rest of them.
Yeah, and then Origin just came out, actually. I've seen it on bookshelves recently. So, I mean, he's gone to say, like, he would be interested in writing, like, dozens more of the Langdon series. So we'll kind of see how that pans out in the future. But there are some other Dan Browns out there, Davis.
There are plenty, and I would love to talk about them if you will let me, Adam. Can I talk about the Dan Browns?
Let's hear about the Dan Browns.
Perfect. I've got a few that I want to mention, not going to dive into as usual, but they're notable. There's a Dan Brown, Daniel Russell Brown, who was born in 1848. He was actually the 43rd governor of Rhode Island, which is pretty fun. His daughter was on her honeymoon on the British ocean liner, the Carpathia. And she was on it when it picked up survivors of the Titanic, which is interesting. So that's neither here nor there. Just can you imagine being on your honeymoon and then be like, oh, this tragedy that will be remembered for a long, long, long time, we're now taking on survivors from this tragedy. There is another politician, Daniel Brown, who is was the acting mayor formerly of, here we go, Adam, you're going to love this, Knoxville, Tennessee.
Okay.
He was the acting mayor in Knoxville. He was the first African-American to serve as mayor of Knoxville, Tennessee. So kind of a cool legacy there.
I feel like that's a pretty big step for anywhere in Tennessee.
Yeah, so absolutely. That's awesome. You're right. Excuse me, not 2013, 2011. Okay. He was selected as interim mayor for, I think, just a few months in 2011. But as the interim mayor, he was the first African-American mayor of Knoxville, Tennessee. Yeah. So Dan Brown.
Nice. Okay. I have a couple for you. Can I hit you with my first one?
Please. I would love to know about this Daniel Brown.
Okay. So this is Danny Brown, actually, a hip-hop rap artist who nice. I've actually seen in concert.
No so, way, really? Yeah,
I saw him this last year at ACL. He was he's there playing with one of the bands that I like, and he just kind of made an appearance, a guest vocal on one of their tracks, and so he came and sang. So,
very cool.
So he was born Daniel Dwayne Sewell, 1981. But if you've ever heard this guy, he does have a very kind of interesting tone about himself. And I think he's very good. I've listened to a lot of his stuff since then. Mom kind of like raised him on Dr. Seuss books, and said that when he began speaking in an early age, that it would usually be in rhymes, and largely due to like the rhyme scheme that you get out of Dr. Seuss books.
Right. Yeah.
Even in kindergarten, he said he wanted to be a rapper, and obviously got into. Jokes picked on him for like saying that at even an early age.
Right.
But he kind of did fall into some hard times, became a drug dealer at 18. His family had a falling apart, his parents split. Mm-hmm. So kind of like a tumultuous period in his life.
Yeah.
But he began his career with a hip-hop group called the Reservoir Dogs, made his debut solo album called The Hybrid in 2010. Okay. These were like a series of mixtapes that he put together. And so he would eventually sign to 56 G-Unit record label, which I remember that, but man, that is a... That's something I've not heard about in a long time.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, it's been a minute.
So that was his first album, which I think was pretty well received. Came out with XXX. In 2013 is when he would enter the U.S. Billboard charts with his third album called Old, which I really like. It's a very good album, and it features a bunch of different artists on that one. And then in 2014, he actually came out with his latest album, which I'm pretty sure features the DNA guy. I got Loyalty.
Oh, Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah. So he came out with
Can you do your Kendrick Lamar impression though again real quick?
No.
I got Loyalty.
I got.
That's good. That's good.
So it has features Kendrick Lamar on it, which again, it's a good album. I enjoy it a lot. I know him just off the top of my head. He does a song with Run the Jewels, which I mean, we both know I'm a big fan of Run the Jewels.
I know, so you love Run the Jewels.
Yeah, so that's kind of where I started listening to him, man. So, but once I kind of went into his discography, I realized, oh, I actually do know a lot of this guy's songs. So,
right.
Yeah, and he just has a pretty noticeable voice where when I heard him first, I was actually not around the stage he was playing at and didn't even know he was playing. And yeah. I heard his voice like, oh, yeah, I know that guy. Like, so he's just kind of one of those like noticeable voices. So his latest album, he also kind of inspired loosely off his... the Dr. Seuss children's books that kind of inspired him as a kid. So, so it's kind of cool to see that that comes back in his life a little bit. I very much enjoy his work and excited to see kind of where he's going to go after this.
Okay. That's awesome. That's Dan Brown. We got a Danny Brown.
Yeah. Who do you got?
Okay. I've got a Dan Brown. His full name is Daniel Scott Zoller Brown. And if we have any younger listeners, they may be more familiar with him than our older listeners, because Dan Brown is a YouTuber. Okay. He's a vlogger and discussion host. He has a YouTube channel and his YouTube alias is Pogo Bat.
Say that one more time for me, Davis?
Pogo Bat, as in, you know, like that big jumpy stick that you can ride around on, plus the big scary vampire animal. Pogo Bat, right?
Two ways that I would not describe a pogo stick are a way to ride around, a thing that you can ride around on.
Stick. It's okay. You describe a pogo stick right now, other than big jumpy stick. Do it right now. Come up with a different phrase.
Springy stick.
One of those two words is a word that I also used, which is in the name of the thing we're talking about. So we're both garbage at this. Off my back.
Just the transportation one got me.
I'm 10 seconds into talking to Dan Brown, and you're climbing all over me. All right. So Dan Brown is a YouTuber, Pogo Bat. He basically kind of started off doing some how-to videos, including such things as how to jump on a pogo stick, how to, you know, solve a Rubik's Cube, etc. Just like fun, kind of goofy things to do. He actually founded Pogo Palooza, which is the annual world championship of stunt pogoing.
No, he didn't.
He founded it when he was 14. Dude knew what he loved, knew what he was passionate about early on, and he was like, I'm going to make my dream a reality and do Pogo Palooza. So, yeah, founded Pogo Palooza.
Where's this hat? Because I want to go now. Do you know where it's at?
It's in Indianapolis, I believe. Lincoln, Nebraska. He lived in Lincoln when he was young, and he did it. He started Pogo Palooza in, I don't know what the status is now, but I read about it at the very beginning. It was in the parking lot of the church that his mom works at, and it was eight pogo stick pogoers, pogoists. I don't know what the pogoers term is for someone who does a pogo. The pogoins. There were eight of them, and they performed in front of a crowd of 30 people. That was the first Pogo Palooza that Dan Brown started when he was 14 years old. And I don't know what the status is now, but...
Oh, Davis, do you want to know what the status is now?
I need to know.
It is big time. Okay, there is... I just pulled the website up. They're sponsored... they're sponsored by Haribo, which is,
Gummy Bears. It's Gummy Bears.
So, X-Pogo, which symbol looks almost exactly like Team X-Blade.
So, he was actually a member of starting X-Pogo. X-Pogo is the big online community for pogo stick jumping. Haven't figured out what that is.
This looks like X Games, but like the people that didn't get invited because they are on Pogo. So it's like, I wouldn't have room for you. So they just made their own thing.
Or out of the people that are too good for X Games because they're on Pogo sticks.
Nice. I like that spin on it. Yeah. So best trick competition, freestyle, finals, high jump.
We got to go and get some Pogo Palooza swag.
Oh, for sure.
To be able to wear on. Anyway, so Dan Brown created Pogo Palooza. He's a big Pogo jumper, YouTuber. In 2010, he launched a project that he called Dan 3.0, which was basically he had people write in, send in submissions for tasks they had to complete. So he essentially let YouTube run his life for one calendar year, which is interesting. Sort of commentary on like the fact that social media runs our lives anyway, but he was like, I'm physically going to let my viewers like tell me what to do. He quit in 2011 for personal reasons, which the personal reasons probably were, I don't want other people to tell me how to run my life anymore. Every single second of every day.
Stop telling me to do illegal things. I'm not going to be able to do this.
The personal reasons were probably every reason that has to do with his personal life. So in 2016, he's kind of taken an indefinite hiatus to go back and do some school. He works for X-Pogo for that website that he helped start. And then a couple other random things. In 2010, he was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, which is funny. Yeah, he was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire in 2010. He won the grand sum. He'd catch this, $5,000 on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. So he made it to $10,000 and got it wrong.
Isn't that like four questions in, though?
I legitimately think that's like the third question. I like laugh at that. But then I think about my own, like when I play HQ, I'm proud when I make it past like the third question. That's actually pretty good.
That it's like you get to the first thing like easy. And then you get to that third HQ question and like, all right, I'm about to have my life destroyed by whatever, you know, it's like a quantum physics question. And the first one was like, what color is the sky?
Yeah. HQ's got to be HQ. You kind of have to be an expert in whatever the night's theme is, like whatever the theme team is for what they're doing, you kind of got to know that realm or else you're hosed from the, like, question four on.
Dave, do you want to take a break?
Yeah, that's great. Let's take a break.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to our podcast. We just wanted to stop and mention, if you or someone you know shares a name with a famous person, we'd love to know. You can reach out to us on inawcast@gmail.com. That's inawcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter by searching inawcast. Like, share, subscribe. Really, anything helps us get our podcast out there. So please tell your friends, review, and enjoy the rest of the episode. Okay, I have one more Dan Brown for you.
Let me have it.
Okay, so I like my trend I'm going with because I'm sticking with the music trend that has gone through all three of the Dan Browns that I've gotten to talk about. So this one's a little bit, I would say, middle ground in the area. Have you ever heard of a band called Molly Hatchet?
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so I think I saw some of their album work, and I listened to a few of their songs while researching, and I think I've heard of them. But Molly Hatchet is an American Southern rock band out of Jacksonville, Florida, which makes perfect sense.
Boo.
You know, like, they would come out of Jacksonville,
Boo.
Florida. So the lead singer of that band, or the original lead singer of that band, was Danny Joe Brown. But most of their early work is kind of what's known now. So he was born in Florida, graduated high school, went to the Coast Guard. And he helped write and sung Flirting with Disaster and Whiskey Man, which were they're kind of like their most popular songs. If you go on their Spotify or anything, those are the first two that pop up. He left the band in 1980 because of chronic diabetes and would eventually pass away due in 1995 after a stroke. And I think his diabetes like played a large factor into his death. He had a few other diseases as well, which, you know, kind of go with the whole music scene. Getting back into his band, so Molly Hatchet, they were always kind of the band that they were known, but they always kind of missed out on like the popular of the big time. So they were originally they cut a demo and they sent them to Warner Brothers Records, who picked Van Halen over Molly Hatchet. So like, which we all know Van Halen, like so there was kind of a setback. They started touring the kind of like the bar circuit, the smaller scenes, and so they would they did end up getting notoriety for their first album. I mean, they are just your typical Southern rock band. Like, all of them have the big long melody hair, just the grossest mustaches that you can imagine, all the way down to the core. But what really kind of interests me in the Molly Hatchet is like where they got their name from. So do you know who Molly Hatchet is / was, or maybe
I like have a vague knowledge, but hit me with it.
Okay, so Molly Hatchet, and it's kind of hard to figure out because there's not a lot of validity between the stories. So she's kind of a kind of an urban legend, but she is a one source says that she is a Southern prostitute during the Civil War, and there was a man in the I think in Georgia, maybe in Florida, that they saw him leave with a young girl, and they found his body in a bed and his head was chopped off on the floor.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So it goes, you know, 0 to 60. And they said the last person to see him was this young girl named Molly Hatchet.
Uh-huh.
And then again, the story continues that she went to small town, North Carolina called Boone, which I've been to a few times, where she is killed five other people. But just things are so ambiguous because some people say this is just, I mean, it's all urban legends, you never existed. And then, so it seems like in kind of like every state, the story of Molly Hatchet kind of changes a little bit.
Right.
But yeah, so she's just like this kind of southern rock, southern legend, and that's where they pull their name from, of this like southern killer. Some people even call her a ghost, that she like is haunting these places.
Nice.
So, yeah, so it's kind of interesting, but yeah, so that's just kind of a weird story to tell about this band named Molly Hatchet from that Danny Brown sang in. So
okay, there you go. I've actually got another Dan Brown, and it's another author Dan Brown. How about that? We've got Daniel Brown. Seems like it's a name that is associated with a very narrow series of professions, huh? So Daniel James Brown, who was born in 1951, is another American author, and he writes narrative books, but they're nonfiction. So he sort of narrativizes historical events. Yeah.
Okay.
He's got kind of three books that he's written. They're called Under a Flaming Sky, The Indifferent Stars Above, and The Boys in the Boat. And so the first book, Under a Flaming Sky, is about the Great Hinckley Firestorm of 1894, which we'll talk about in a second. The second book, The Indifferent Stars Above, is about one of the members of the Donner Party. Have you ever heard of the Donner Party? Do you know what that is?
Oh, that's the cannibalistic party that went to the Oregon Trail, right?
Yeah, went on the Oregon Trail. So it's about one of the women in that situation. And then the last one, The Boys in the Boat, is about nine Americans and their epic quest for gold at the 1936 Olympics, which is about this rowing team, which is basically just nine dudes, kind of, you know, they're normal guys who rowed for the University of Washington that went on to compete for gold in the Olympics. So the Great Hinckley Fire, have you ever heard of this, this fire from Minnesota? Okay.
Well, just and correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't Hinckley, like, is that synonymous with something?
I don't know if I could tell you. It's Hinckley, Minnesota. So I've never heard of Hinckley, Minnesota until this point. But basically, so there's this fire that happened in Minnesota in 1894 that, I mean, essentially, like, I mean, destroyed two or three towns.
Okay. Wow.
The official death count was 418, which is pretty insane.
Yeah.
So basically what happened was there was a drought and everything was super dry. And when they would do logging at this point in time, they would basically cut all the branches off the trees where they stood, which created this layer of essentially piles and piles of firewood on the forest floor. So it was kind of this bad deal.
Man,
for
looking back on that, that seems exactly what a fire would start.
I know, right? It seems like maybe not the most forward thinking.
No.
But so here's what happens. I didn't know that a firestorm, like, that's an actual thing. That's not just like a word for lots of fire. It's a phenomenon that occurs. But what happens is there's a temperature inversion, which means that hot air gets trapped underneath cold air, and it kind of creates this layer where this heat just builds up underneath a layer of like cold air. When the cold air eventually somehow penetrates or punctures into this layer of hot air pressure, it all funnels down into the hot air and essentially explodes, right? So there's hot air, there's fire trapped underneath cold air. The cold air rushes down and basically it creates a tornado, and this tornado catches fire and flings it everywhere, which is a firestorm. It's not just like a word. It's a meteorological thing that happens where there's literally a storm of fire. So there were these fires in Minnesota. There's one day where this temperature inversion happens. The cold air broke into the hot air and essentially blew up this area of Minnesota in Pine County, Minnesota.
Wow.
I found it. The firestorm destroyed six towns and over 400 square miles lay black and smoldering. Square miles. The firestorm, it only lasted 4 hours, but it completely destroyed.
4 hours?
Yeah, that's all. That's. I mean, which in terms of like forest fires, that's not that long. But it was basically a 4 hour explosion is what happened.
Oh my gosh!
So really, really, really crazy kind of. There's a memorial there, but that's. So he writes his book about the Great Hinckley Fire, which I'm surprised I've never heard of it. That's insane.
Yeah,
that's his first book. Second book talks about Sarah Graves, who is a member of the Donner Party. Basically, there's this group of people at Donner Party, about 50 people, who were traveling to Oregon, which to get anywhere in Oregon, you've got to pass through like like a million miles of snow, no matter where you are or where you're going to. Yeah. So they're on this path and they get snowed in at these cabins. And what was interesting is what I read was that the actual cannibalism was a relatively minor event in kind of the whole saga of them getting from one place to another, getting rescued, because they got snowed in at cabins and most of the families stayed there and they ate stuff. Like they ate the rug, they ate the hides that were covering up holes in the roof. Like they ate a bunch of stuff, but not people. It was a smaller party of like, I think 6 or 8 people who left to try to go get help. They try to climb up this mountain, and on their way, there's a couple of them that ended up getting eaten. But like really, really crazy stuff. Like when they came back, they still had these dead people's bodies that they were eating. And so they like brought them back and put them outside to like freeze, but they put them in separate places so that family members wouldn't accidentally eat their family members. Like crazy stuff.
Yeah. Cause anyway, you want to draw the line between eating people and eating family members.
Yeah. We're not savages.
Yeah, like we keep our pinkies out when we're eating these humans.
Gosh. Some of those things, like it's insane to me how brave and I think determined some of these people were that did the treks to find new land. Like really insane stuff to be able to survive and like make it through and to like even persevere through things like that. So yeah. And then the last book that he wrote, The Boys in the Boat, is about the University of Washington students who rowed an 8-man rowing team in the 1936 Olympics in Berlin and actually beat Italy and Germany to win gold, which is kind of cool because it happened in 1936, like right before World War II. So talk about these boys who struggled through the Depression. They were kind of from working middle class families, ended up rowing, and then won gold in the Olympics. So anyway, those books are written by Dan Brown, the other nonfiction author.
Okay, so who do you like, Davis? Who do you think takes the cake?
It's tough. It's like, it's interesting. Here's the interesting thing. I think this is the first one we've seen where I don't think Dan Brown, the author, should be as famous as he is. I think he just kind of lucked into generating some people talking about, oh, this is What If, and that's why people read those books. So I sort of think that they should all be equally known, which is to say should be known not that much. Yeah. I don't know if that's like harsh or cruel or like,
that's a little mean,
I think they did good work. There's no one in here that I'm like, they were super impactful in their field. They really deserve like great fame, great recognition. There's just nobody that I'm like, they deservedly should be the most famous Dan Brown, except for maybe, I think, just historical significance. He was one that we just mentioned briefly, but the Dan Brown, who's the interim mayor of Knoxville, like that's an accomplishment to be like, okay, he was the first African-American mayor of Knoxville. I don't know. What do you think? Do you think I'm off base here?
I mean, I'm not going to come out and say exactly the same thing you said, but I definitely agree. Like, I think Dan Brown rode the coattails of controversy in a lot. And like, and again, I've read some of his books, and like, when your books are made to like be conspiracy theories, like there's people out there that like they eat that stuff up. And so I think he was smart enough to know like, hey, people will read these. And so,
don't hear me say he's a bad author or he's not smart. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think that it has way more recognition than it actually merits.
I actually like the other author a little bit better. You know, like if you were to tell me about the two books and then say, read one of these, I would read the story about the firestorm before I read Da Vinci Code.
Yeah, I think I would too.
So that's my only thing, is like, I think he might be more interesting to me. Maybe doesn't need to be more known, but I find him more interesting.
That's totally fair.
Is that fair?
The winner this week is nobody, except for all of us, for getting to learn about these wonderful Dan Browns.
That's true. You got anything else for us, Davis?
I don't think so. It's been a pleasure as always.
We'd like to thank Broke for Free for letting us use their song Luminous. Hope you enjoyed the episode, and we'll see you next time.